family annihilators. Criminal experts say so-called family annihilators are often trying to spare their families from an indignity or tragedy, either real or imagined. A story I will share with you this Tuesday. A family of four. On the outside, they were perfect. On the inside, they had issues. But so does everyone, right? Will we ever really know what happened between the Watts family? Only Chris is left now. So will we ever know the truth behind the father, the husband, and the monster inside? This is the story of the Watts family murders. Tuesdays with Trisha, episode 24. So welcome to Frederick, Colorado for this week's episode. If you're a first-time listener, welcome to the coolest place on earth. And if you're a repeat basic bitch, welcome back. Thanks for listening, and my heart is with you. So this town in Colorado was actually first named McKissick. But in 1907, a coal miner named Frederick actually bought the town, and his daughters renamed the town after him. And then it is reported that in 1928, the Frederick coal mine actually shut down. So it didn't last too long. In recent years, 2014 to be exact, the town rebranded itself by creating a new logo that had like a gas lamp and mountain range in the background, and a new tagline for the town called Built on What Matters. So to me, this town seems like kind of like a quaint, beautiful town with a good middle working class built into it. And since I've never really been to Colorado, well, I've never been to Colorado and don't know much about it, I'm actually going to ask my guest sitting here with me this week. This would be a good time to introduce him. We have known each other for what, like 18 years now, I think it is, or like 18 year friendship. Victor, are you there? Oh, crap. Victor, are you there? Shoot. I'm going to have to redo this. I don't know if you can hear me. I can't hear you at all. I don't know what happened. Right. Hang on, let's see if it sounds better if I
boom, like boom, have boom. A little bit of a delay. The Watts murders. That was pretty cool. I mean, shit. What made them snap? What makes people snap?
Yeah. It's true. What makes people snap?
You know what? I'll tell you one of my deepest secrets right now.
Okay.
Well, I mean, I think everybody goes through this. They probably think of like, what would it feel to stab somebody? Or maybe I am crazy. I think everybody has
that movie because, you know, the guy, the beast, the guy who's running the white supremacist gang, gave him a book called The Human Animal. So I haven't read it, but I really want to read it now, because in a way we kind of are animals, right? So we have conscience, we have free will, but this guy was an animal. You can argue. I think his animal instincts just took over. What makes people snap? I mean, shit, it could be so many different things, but His animal instinct just took over, because that's really what, to kill his pregnant wife and his two daughters, especially after the little girl, what she said, the second girl. I'm just getting chills thinking about it.
I know.
And what's, that's not even really most craziest story that I've heard. Like, people have done, I've heard of, for like, cartels in Mexico do like worse things to kids. If they, like, for example, if their dads are from like in a different cartel, they'll kidnap the kids and like really, really, you know, do really fucked up shit. And in a way, it's, you know, it's kind of, I'm like, you know, there's some kind of parallel there. You know, you have to have your animal instinct take over to be able to do that to a child.
All right, so welcome Victor to the show. What up, Victor?
What's up, Trisha? Thank you for having me. It's good to see you after all these years.
Yes, yes, yes. I know, it's been such a long time.
Such a long time.
Well, let's get into this here. So first we're going to talk about Shanann Watts. Shanann was actually born on January 10th, 1984 in New Jersey, but she actually grew up in North Carolina with her parents, Frank and Sandra Ruzick. She had one sibling, her brother, Frankie. Now, Shanann was described as like a vivacious young lady growing up. And so it's said when she was 18, she married her first husband, Leonard King. Yeah, so that's pretty young to get married. I don't know about that, but
yeah, that's like a flag right there. I feel like if you're 18, and
right,
it's a little too, moving a little too fast there, Shanann.
Yes.
Enjoy life a little.
Exactly. Yeah, I kind of think the same thing. Oh. But so I guess this would explain why the relationship only lasted about 4 years. And by 2008, the pair was actually divorced.
And how old was the first husband?
I believe the same age.
Okay, so it's not like he was like a 35-year-old man marrying a... Okay.
No, yeah. And if it wasn't the same age, it was maybe like a couple of years older, wasn't anything like crazy.
Okay.
Yeah. But Shanann actually stated in like video blogs, I don't know if you had ever seen any of her video blogs that she did, but she said like it actually took a lot from her emotionally and she was like super damaged by it. So because of like the way she grew up and, the, you know, turmoil she kind of took emotionally from her marriage, she worked her ass off. And it looks like by the age of 25, Shanann had built her first home, which she states was like her greatest accomplishment so far, which I thought was pretty rad, you know?
So she, how long was she married with the first marriage? It was only a couple of years.
Yeah, it was like 4 years. And like during that time, she went through that marriage, and then after that she kind of like worked her ass off, and then by 25 had built her first home.
Well, I wonder if she would have been able to do that living in California.
I know. That's actually
not to take away from her hard work, but you know.
Yeah, that's very true. Although I've known a couple of people out here that have done that.
Okay, what was her work?
During that time, it just looked like she did a lot of like odd end jobs, you know, like working for different companies.
Okay.
I think one of them, even she was like a waitress for a while. So, you know, and you should see the pictures of the home too. It's like really pretty. The one that she actually like built and stuff.
She was probably into coupons and saving a lot of money through coupons. Well,
that would be super smart if she was.
It's a possibility.
Sadly, though, for her, even though she was, you know, working hard and doing all that, a year after, like, she built her first house, she was actually diagnosed with lupus, and she began having to, like, battle with that, and she said that it was, like, one of the darkest times in her life. Now, just real quick, because I know you know what lupus is, Victor, but lupus, for my listeners here, if you're unfamiliar, it's actually an autoimmune disease that attacks the soft tissues and muscles of the body. Symptoms can include fatigue, joint pain, rash, and fever. And there's actually no cure for lupus, but people do live with the disease and can temporarily be treated when flare-ups do occur. So, Victor, you know anybody that has had lupus in the past?
You know, I actually, now that I think about it, I did know someone before that had lupus. Somebody I quite liked a lot, and she became very distant, pretty much disappeared from my life because of the lupus.
Oh, wow.
But, yeah, but it was years ago. I would say maybe at least 10 years ago.
Yeah. That's crazy, though. A lot of people I heard go into, you know, I mean, it's just probably got to be such a battle.
Yeah, I guess they don't want to put people through the pain. Or...
Well, yeah, it's also like such an internal battle, too, I'm sure, you know, because they're going through all this pain, but like on the outside, we can't really see it very much, you know, so. Yeah, that's crazy. Well, condolences to your friend. I haven't known anybody, you know, that has had lupus, so. I just
lucky you, lucky to all your friends.
Yes, okay. Very true. Yes. So next, we're going to talk about the second person in our story today, which is Christopher Watts. Now, Christopher Watts was born on May 16th, 1985 in Colorado, but he too grew up in North Carolina, and his parents were Cindy and Ronnie Watts, and he also had one sibling, and her name was Jamie Lynn Williams. He had actually a fairly normal childhood. And in his senior year of high school, I guess it said that he won $1,000 scholarship for winning an automotive competition. But honestly, besides that, I really couldn't find much on his college or work life that he did. Like, it looks like at some point, you know, like, he started working for the oil and gas company, but that was like a little bit before he met Shanann, or I think after he met Shanann.
And that's a pretty normal occupation for that town, right? So it's nothing out of the ordinary.
Yeah, yeah. Doing that in North Carolina, I'm sure you have some sort of, I mean, I don't know. Yeah, middle class working job.
He was just a regular guy who had a bad week.
Yep. Well, not yet. As far
not
as
yet.
not yet as far as his bad week. Right now, you know, he's just growing up, this guy. You know, now we got to talk about him getting into this with this relationship with Shanann here. So, you know how the couple very first met, actually?
Well, it was probably definitely not Tinder.
No, not Tinder. But it was Facebook.
Oh, I was actually not too far off.
No, you weren't. Uh-uh. Facebook request in 2010. But Shanann was actually still battling her lupus during this time that her and Chris first started talking. I don't know about that online thing. You know, I have to say it's something that I've like recently started because
it's a very modern thing.
Yeah, it's weird though, you know, like I recently started this because, like, you know, I'm recently single and
so you recently started you started venturing into the unknown.
Yeah, like talking to people, you know, I haven't reached out like myself personally, you know, I'm just responding. And I feel like a lot of these guys are very aggressive.
Oh, yeah. I hear that quite a bit from everybody.
Like, what is it? Like, you know, it's like I look at the message and then I kind of gauge whether I'm like weirded out or not, you know? And if I'm not weirded out, I'll like respond with like a wave or a hello. But if I'm weirded out, I just kind of like, you know, just don't respond. And then, like, why do I get question marks afterwards or like weird, like this one guy went into a whole paragraph.
What are you using?
Right now it's just Facebook, and I normally don't. Well, you know, because we're on the Facebook subject here, so.
So that's what you use?
I mean, no, I've never really used. I've used Match.com in the past.
Match.com, okay, that's one of the more mainstream ones.
But that was like 5 years ago, like a long time ago.
Well, since you're back in the market, just remember, don't meet anybody on Facebook.
Yes, seriously, after this story.
No random guys on Facebook, because that's like a flag, you know?
Right? That's what I thought. I thought the random dudes from Facebook were like a huge flag.
And not to be insensitive to Shannon, but, you know, Chris, it's not like, how do I say this? It's not like a guy is gonna meet a woman on Facebook and she has lupus and then all of a sudden fall in love. I feel that's not, you know, it's not very normal.
Oh.
Maybe he has some kind of insecurity issues, or a lot of people. I mean, a lot of
well,
people, obviously, we all do. I don't know. There's something. Maybe she is. Maybe she had a great personality. She had, you know, she was very special. But I just feel like it's. I don't know. I just feel like he couldn't find another. I don't know. You know,
no, I think it's funny that you say that, because actually one of the few documentaries that are out there on it totally touches on the subject that he had like some sort of insecurities. He was actually like a little, like, I guess, bigger, you know, he was like a, you know, bigger dude. He had a little bit more weight on him.
Okay.
You know,
yeah.
So
yeah.
And then and then I think, you know, and then with her having the lupus and stuff, because like she really describes him as being like compassionate and understanding, and that he loved her, you know, through this time, you know, so like she kind of felt like, wow, he loved me at my worst, like what is he going to be like at like my best,
right,
kind of type situation.
He was just a big murderous teddy bear.
I mean, eventually, yeah.
Eventually, yeah.
But,
I'm getting ahead of myself too much here.
Well, yeah, no, but it's just you're right. It's just crazy to think, you know, like, yeah, this is what it ended up being. But in the beginning like this, you're right. Like, you're like, oh, there's the flags right there. You're like, don't meet on Facebook. It just seems so simple, you know? Yet, here the couple was. They ended up marrying on November 3rd, 2012. So that kind of debunked all of that. Although, I have to say, though, you know, my brother and my sister and my brother-in-law, they met on Match.com, and they've been married for like 10 years now.
Yeah, but that's a little more normal.
Well, why? Why is it normal? Because you have to like pay for it.
It's a site that's dedicated for matchmaking. Facebook is a. I'm sorry, I'm not explaining it right. I feel like if, for example, in the case of Chris, maybe he found her profile and randomly requested her, you know, her Facebook friendship, whatever, and you know, that's just kind of how, I don't know, it just seems weird to me. Like, Match.com at least is a freaking dating site, you know?
Yeah, and you're like, oh, here's people meeting on Facebook that don't even know each other.
Yeah, like, these people, like, were, like, he just found her profile and added her, and all of a sudden they're married. Like, I don't know, it's just kind of,
Well, you know, Facebook has, like, a dating app now.
Now they do, but that's an interesting thing.
I still think that's so weird.
It's totally based off of the Tinder app, apparently. But yeah, they did that. They're in the dating market now.
Yeah,
Facebook's on the dating market.
Facebook's capitalizing over here.
Well, I guess, you know, Zuck is being smart about it, I guess.
I know, right? I guess so. Jeez. So, okay, so the couple ended up moving because they were living in North Carolina when they got married. And so they end up buying a home and they moved to Frederick, Colorado. Because at this point, this is when Chris gets his job at like the oil and gas company, which is called Andarco Petroleum. And I guess they say he makes like about like $65,000 a year. So, I mean, that's pretty good.
Not bad at all for Chris.
Yeah, and they had that nice, you know, nice ass house. Everybody saw it on the news. Shanann was actually working as an HR specialist at the Colorado Children's Hospital and was also working for a multi-level marketing company called Lavelle and sold a product called Thrive. So, you know, like the, what was this?
Lavelle makes Thrive.
Okay. Yeah, Lavelle makes Thrive. What was Thrive again?
It's probably one of those protein shake things to lose weight and.
Oh, right. It's like the little, yeah, I know there's a whole bunch of different.
Meal replacement, whatever, organic powders.
Okay, I see.
I think that's what it sounds to me.
I know. I think that's what it is too. I didn't do my research on it, so
I feel like 75% of those multi-level marketing companies are some kind of organic powder meal.
Right, that's true. Or it's like products you can buy on the internet that you can like supposedly are supposed to be cheaper than buying them in the store or whatever it may be.
You're talking about Amway.
Oh, is that what it is? The Amway?
Amway way.
The Amway way. I want to see my brother-in-law did that for a while, too.
Oh, man, this tattoo artist I was working with in Venice Beach, he tried to get me into that, like, maybe in the beginning of the pandemic, but back in March.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah. He tried to get me into it. He actually got me to go into the group call with some Amway. Probably the lowest point in my life. I got conned into an Amway meet.
It's all right. You made it out.
Sure did.
All right. So I guess the same year that they moved and bought their home in 2013, the couple welcomed their first child, Bella, on December 17th, 2013. And then later, their second daughter, Celeste, aka Cece, was born on July 17th, 2015. I just have to shout out because my son was born on July 17th, 2007.
And I was born on March 17th.
Yes. Wow. So, yeah, see, we got a bunch of like 17s going on here.
Yeah, I hope doesn't mean any creepy shit down the road.
It's gonna happen to you. No, I hope not either. But it just seems fitting that you're the guest on this episode.
Yeah,
I would say, you know,
meant to be numerologically.
Definitely. So on the outside, I guess you would say all seemed well, like in the Watts home. Both parents were doing well, like work-wise, and I guess the girls were growing up in a happy, loving environment. But by 2018, Shanann actually had a big surprise for Chris. She was pregnant again with their third child. Yes, revealed this to him by capturing it. Like, it was actually really cute what she did. She put it on video, and she was wearing like a t-shirt that said, "Oops, we did it again." So she was like referencing the Britney Spears song.
Britney Spears.
Oops, I did it again. So, but it was actually cute because, you know, she videoed it and his reaction in the video, like, was really sweet. He seemed to handle, like, the news really well. So
he was not pissed off. He didn't demand an abortion or anything.
Like no, that. Not at all. Or just have, like, a weird reaction. Because, I mean, there's been girls that have done videos like that where the guys are like, what the hell, you know, and they're kind of, like, upset about it. But he like totally gives her like a hug and a kiss in the video, and you can kind of see it takes him a second to kind of like figure out like what's going on, and he reads like the t-shirt and he starts to laugh. So, you know, in that sense, you don't really see like anything too bad going on, I guess.
You don't see any warning signs from them.
Yeah, definitely, or at least not from him. You know, for her, you definitely see that she was excited and in love with her husband, you know, but there was definitely like a dark cloud brewing for this family.
Dun, dun, dun.
Oh. So over the years, the couple were in Colorado. Like, I guess like any couple, things were tough for them, you know. I don't think we mentioned this in the beginning, but when they first got married, this like trouble in the marriage kind of started on their wedding day, because Chris's parents didn't like attend the wedding. And, you know, like, I guess like girls in the documentary, Shanann's friends, you know, talk about how they just Chris's parents weren't too fond of Shanann. So that put a strain on some things.
I wonder why.
Right.
I wonder if this was, maybe it was a religious thing. Maybe it was a...
No, yeah, I guess they said she was like bossy. And...
Oh, okay. Nobody likes a boss. I said it.
I mean, it's, you know, like, to each your own, you know, we don't know. I mean,
yeah, but also, the parents should have went to the wedding. That's like, boy, that's like really ridiculous.
No, yeah, it's kind of hard. It's kind of hard to start like a marriage too with that sort of like strain on it. You know, I'm sure it was difficult for him, you know, to try and enjoy what's supposed to be one of the best days of his life. You know, and his parents aren't there in support of it. So I could see that could cause issues for sure. So,
very rude.
Yeah, I guess it just got worse too, because it, you know, obviously drove a wedge between Chris and Shanann. And then I guess when Shanann became pregnant for the third time, Chris wasn't too fond of like actually it happening. So it's kind of funny to see his reaction in the video.
He pretended he was happy, but he was not happy deep down inside.
Yeah, I don't think so. I think he really didn't want to have a third child. You know, so, and you can kind of tell that she was like a little nervous to like even tell her husband about the news. So it was kind of good that he did decide to, you know, like have a good reaction in the video, I guess. So
he won't leave no evidence.
Right. Yeah. So it looks like, so this brings us to late June of 2018. And this is actually when Shanann decides to take herself and the girls on a family trip. Everybody decides to go back to North Carolina, but they decide to leave Chris in Colorado. And it was said that Chris would join them on the last week of the trip to fly back home with Shanann and the girls. But Shanann reports a lot to her girlfriends that Chris like barely contacts her and the kids while she's gone. So, and then I guess she kind of gets into a tiff with Chris's parents. So I guess the youngest girl, Cece, has like allergies to like a whole bunch of things. So food allergies in particular. So, you know, like obviously as a mom, you know, she always tried to make things fair between the girls and make sure that everybody was aware of the allergies. You know, like I understand that because if I was a parent and somebody brought like peanut butter cookies and my kid couldn't have peanut butter, I'd be fucking pissed, you know? Yeah. So I guess this happened a couple of times. And then one of the times that they were there in particular, she took the kids to go see Chris's parents, and Chris's parents had brought like a particular ice cream that Cece couldn't have, you know? So this infuriated Shanann, and she of course probably sent rage texts to her husband on how this bothered her a whole bunch. And yeah, I mean, so
it's one thing, you know, when the parents tell their grandparents not to give kids junk food, but it's another thing when the junk food might kill the kid, you know?
Like, right? Yeah, exactly. I don't understand that behavior sometimes.
I gotta be on Shanann's side on that, because that's like, you know, the grandparents should know not to bring anything that can't kill the kid. You know, like.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. You know, it's kind of crazy. I've seen a lot of like family members do vindictive stuff like that to people, and I just don't understand it. It doesn't make any sense. Like, you know, they damn well know, you know, they, it's not like they had a momentary lapse in judgment or just was like, oh, we forgot. Well, if you forgot, that means you're obviously not spending enough time with your grandchildren to pay attention to the fact that, you know, something like that can happen. So I think it was just something that they just did to dig at Shanann, and in turn, like, caused, you know, a riff between Shanann and Chris when it came to all of this, because she's here like, here, you need to stick up for me. And he's like, okay, you know, I'm sure, you know, he agreed with her, but at the same time probably was like, all right, lady, lay off. Like, I don't know.
That's why I'm not married.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of like stuff that comes with like, you know, marriage. And trust is like a trust and communication, I would think, is like the key to it all, you know. And this is like a perfect time for us to talk about this, because one of the things that Shanann also did, and not only having like the family issues with Chris, but like she constantly accused her husband of cheating on her, you know. It was always.
But was he, or am I getting ahead of myself?
No, so you are right. He was cheating on her, but we'll talk about that in a bit. But, like, he gave the classic signs, and then, you know, naturally made her probably feel like she was batshit crazy. Like everybody does when they're cheating, and they're just like, you're crazy. I'm not doing anything wrong, you know?
Yeah.
So, and she kind of picked up on it more because the family goes on the trip to North Carolina. Chris doesn't contact his family very much while she's gone, then comes and meets them in North Carolina. And like, she really notices the distance then, because she like states that they're like, when he showed up at the airport, like he gave her a kiss at the airport, but that was the only time he touched her, you know? And it's like, dude, if I hadn't seen my husband in 6 weeks, like I would be all over that man, you know, when I saw him next. Yeah, so the fact that your husband's not all over you, I would be like, what the fudge is going on? Are you getting this shit somewhere else? Like, no, what are you doing? Let me see your phone.
Yeah, that man was getting some sexy time somewhere else.
Well, yeah, he must have been, because so... Yeah, and like the documentary that they do of this case, they show that a lot. They show all like her text messages that she sends to her friend. Like she's like, I'm gonna take a shower, you know, because he knows that this is the time to like basically get it in. And then she like they show the text messages later that she sends to her friend, and she's like, well, he turned me down, you know, like I'm crying on the inside, and it's like it's so sad. It's like guys don't realize it. You guys don't realize either, too, you know, when girls get rejected or you don't answer their text messages.
Oh, yeah, I know. We are unsensitive.
The turmoil that it causes some women, you know, like, why can't he just write me back and just say, okay, or fuck off or whatever?
Yeah, the fucked up thing is that Shannon probably thought that Chris was going to be, like, the perfect husband because he's, like, you know, a little overweight and a little insecure. She probably thought that, you know, she had him on lockdown forever. But, you know, it turns out Chris had more game than she was willing to admit to herself.
Yeah, totally. I don't know. So anyways, they come back for the Carolina trip. Okay. So things didn't go so well in the Carolina trip. And then the following week, Shannon actually has to go on a business trip. She's got to go for the business that she's promoting, Thrive. And I guess while she's gone on the business trip, you know, her friends like basically say she was distracted the whole time. She was texting Chris. She knew like things were not going so well in the relationship. And then eventually she comes home, and Shannon would be dropped off by her friend Nicole, and she would return home on August 13th, 2018, around 2 a.m. And this was caught on video cam. And this is the last time anybody will ever have seen Shannon, like, on video. So around 9 a.m. the following day, Shannon actually had a doctor's appointment that was scheduled. Her friend Nicole, the one that had dropped her off earlier in the morning, had actually called her in the morning, but she didn't have a response. She texted her and said, hey, you know, let me know how the doctor's appointment went, and still like no response. So I guess by noontime, Nicole actually still hadn't heard from Shannon. So she like sent her another text and said, I'm on my way over. Like, I'm coming over. I'm worried about you, you know, and kudos to Nicole on this, because, you know, Nicole like first thought, okay, her friend's pregnant. She was having problems with her husband. Like, I dropped her off at 2 a.m. You know, maybe she overslept, or maybe she's not feeling well, whatever the case may be. So Nicole goes over to Shannon's house and goes like in the front yard, looks into the house and sees that her car's there, but like no movement in the house. She bangs on the door, like nobody responding. So it looks like Shannon's not there, but her car's there. So this is when Nicole decides to call 911. So her friend Nicole calls the police and says, hey, I dropped my friend off around 2 a.m. this morning. She had a doctor's appointment scheduled at 9 a.m. She didn't show. You know, I'm just, her car's here in front. I'm just wondering where she's at. And like I said, kudos to this fucking friend, because I don't know how many of my friends would be like, it's been 4 hours. Where the fuck is Trisha?
Wow. Yeah.
I think a lot of my friends would be like, you know, like,
I'll be like, well, she's probably just busy right now, just
yeah, like nobody's gonna be looking for me 4 hours later. But this friend was fucking on it, you know. This friend was like, hell yeah, like where's my friend?
She probably had, you know, one of those feelings, like gut feelings, like, okay, my friend is dead, and. Maybe, I don't know.
Well, she definitely knew like something was wrong for sure. So the fact that she called law enforcement right away. So,
Chris was fighting with Chris and Shannon were fighting, right?
Right. Well, they weren't like physically fighting or anything, but they were definitely, you know, having problems. And I'm sure her being with Shannon all weekend at the, you know, the convention that they were at, I'm sure Shannon like expressed, yeah, like what was going on. So, I mean, I would naturally be concerned about my friend too. You know, it's not like an abnormal thing to just be like, hey girl, you know, how did last night go? Did everything go okay? You know, and then all of a sudden to not hear anything and your friend's pregnant, like, yeah, I guess I would freak too. And this friend did the right thing. So, well,
you also said they had a doctor's appointment, right?
She had a doctor's appointment at 9 a.m. So the fact that she didn't show up and she's...
Yeah, I think that's a big flag for anybody, for, you know.
Oh, heck yeah. Definitely. So, so check this shit out. So in the documentary that they show, you know, police have the body cams now. So when police arrive, they have the friend Nicole, and her friend, and Nicole's got a friend like with her, this dude that's with her. And so the police show up, and at this point, Nicole's on the phone with Shanann's parents. And she's like, hey, I'm trying to get the garage key to open up the garage to get in. You know, can you call, you know, like, can you just, do you know the passcode, you know, and the mom's going, I don't know, you know, I'm not sure. And she's like yelling at the father to ask for like the key code to Shanann's garage. And then the mom says, well, she's like, have you talked to Chris? And she's like, yeah. She's like, Chris told me that Shannon was at a friend's house. And then you can see that the friend like looks kind of like sideways, like, at a friend's house. Well, why wouldn't she take her own car? Like, you know, like, why is her car here? And like, you can see like the wheels like turning on everyone. And then the glitcher, whatever word is that I'm looking for? whatever it is. Chris ends up showing up. So you see Chris pull up at his own house, you know, and the officer, you know, in the officer's body cam, and he like shows up, he comes and he like shakes the officer's hand and then lets everybody like basically into the house. He goes in through the garage and then comes around and opens the front door. And then that's when like the officer and the friend Nicole and the other friend start going in. They kind of start like ransacking the house, like starting to look for Shannon, like what's going on, blah, blah, blah. They find her wedding ring. They find her cell phone. You know, they find like all these different kind of like basically clues as to, oh, it looks like she left. The kids' blankets are gone. So, you know, like the officer starts asking Chris questions, you know, and he just starts saying, oh, well, you know, like she was supposed to go somewhere. Like you can tell he's just being really vague about things and not really knowing like what to say. Kind of like trying to figure out what's going on the same time everybody else is.
Yeah.
The crazy thing too about this is the neighbor actually gets wind that, you know, they're looking to see what's going on. So the neighbor is like, oh, well, you know, the pregnant, you know, wife next door is missing. So he pulls up his video camera that he has. And then later, yes. So later we see Chris and the officer go over to the neighbor's house and watch this video surveillance. And it's some of the craziest shit because you like literally see him back up his car into his driveway, like into his garage. And then he's there for, you know, you see him like whatever, do whatever in the car. You can't really see what he's doing in the back because it's cut off, you know, by it being in the garage. And so they're like going over the footage and Chris is explaining kind of like what's going on and everything. And then finally, Chris leaves the house, you know, and the officer is like, oh, well, I'm just going to interview your neighbor here for a second. And the neighbor, full blown, kudos to him, too, full blown, is like, dude, that guy's not acting right. Like, this is not right. Like, he never pulls up his car like that in all the time that I've seen him be here and have his truck. Like, he never pulls the truck up. Like, this is really weird. This doesn't make sense, you know, and he's not acting himself. So, you know, people are already suspicious from day one that, you know, the husband has something to do with this.
Well, yeah, the neighbor knew him and obviously, this man, Chris, did not plan, I don't want to say it was not a premeditated murder because it definitely sounds like it was, but I don't think he planned it out as much as he maybe thought he did.
Oh, yeah.
He planned so little that he just was not prepared to act normal. He was not prepared to have an alibi. He was not prepared for anything.
Oh yeah, yeah. You can totally see him too when he's like, when they're watching the surveillance video, he's like putting his hands over his head. He looks like he's fucking sweating bullets, you know? And it's just, yeah. It's just like, dude, what did you do? You know, at that point. And so it's just crazy. So eventually, you know, Chris Watts even goes on to like the major news channels in the area in Colorado and basically like pleads for the safety of his wife and children and kind of convinces the whole world that he doesn't know what happened to his wife and children. And eventually, you know, he goes down for questioning with the police and, you know, they do their investigation. And during this time, they ask him to take a polygraph test. And they have all of this recorded, the polygraph test. So everything is on camera, that where I did like basically all my research from of what you can see. And he gets his polygraph test and the lady in the polygraph room too, she's like, look, dude, she's like, if you like did something, she's like, there's really no reason for you to take a polygraph test today because I'm going to find out. So I just want to let you know that like before we start. And he's like, yeah, yeah, it's cool. Like, go ahead. Like, we're good. So he takes, So he takes this polygraph test and then later he's sitting in a room with detectives and the polygraph examiner and they inform Chris Watts that he has failed his polygraph test. They know he's lying. They've done quite the research on Chris and this is what basically they find out. They find out. So first of all, you know, when the officer first went into the house, one of the things I didn't mention as that you see on the video cam when the officer enters the master bedroom is that the entire master bed, the bed is stripped of like the sheets and stuff. There's no sheets. There's no bedding on the master bed. So that was one like weird thing. They also find out that, you know, not only is he lying on the polygraph, but one of the biggest things that they find out is that Chris is having an affair with a woman named Nicole Kessinger.
Ooh.
Dun, dun, dun.
And the plot thickens.
Yep. So you were right, Victor. You were not getting ahead of yourself. You knew exactly where this was heading. So during the weeks that he, you know, like his wife and children were gone in North Carolina, he was having an extramarital affair with this woman. And there's pictures and videos to corroborate all of it.
Videos of their dates?
I guess they went on like a date in like the sand dunes area. They're like, it looks like they're like snowboarding on sand dunes.
Oh,
is
I see. They have little videos.
Yes. And then, of course, you know, his pictures plastered all over the fucking national news. So naturally, she would end up coming and finding out, like, did he not witness the Scott Peterson case back in 2002? I mean, this guy and I are the same age, and I was fully aware of the Scott Peterson case when it happened. So where the fuck was this guy?
Who knows?
You know, so like, if you're going to try and cover up a fucking, you know, a mistress, you better do a better fucking job of it. So that all comes out, and, you know, they seize his truck and they have basically everything going on. So the cops do what they do best and get Chris into a, you know, a room where they start grilling him, you know, and they grill him and grill him. And basically he eventually breaks a little bit and asks for his dad to come into the room. And from the documentary, I really feel that the woman doing the polygraph test really kind of like gave him this like kind of bridge to leap off of. And that was basically like, she was like, Chris, she was like, did Shanann do anything to the kids that made you do something? And then he kind of like was nodding his head, you know, and you're kind of just like, okay, I see where this is going. And then he asks for his dad to come into the room, and he basically confesses to his dad and says, you know, dad, I had an affair on Shanann, and I told her that I wanted to end things, and she told me that I would never see the kids again. And so then she got into a fit of rage and she went and strangled the kids, and in a fit of rage back, I strangled her in return, is what he tells his dad to begin with.
Yeah, just to maybe get some sympathy from dad, or...
Well, yeah, something's going on there, you know, because I feel like the other, like, cop or lie detector lady that was in there, I felt like she really, like, set it up for him, you know, and just he kind of ran with it because... You know, and that's what investigators do. They're good at, like, you know, basically setting people up to really eventually end up confessing, you know, what end up happening, you know. And eventually, that's exactly what, you know, he ends up confessing, because finally, after police talk with him, you know, and they talk with the father and they get everything recorded, you know, they come to the conclusion that on the morning of 2 a.m. on August 13th, 2018, you know, when Shanann Watts entered that home with her husband, Chris Watts, they must have gotten in some sort of argument.
Yeah.
I would think, or, and
that's,
then...
That's a very high probability of that.
Yeah.
I don't think he just killed his pregnant wife.
Right. Or he had premeditated it, you know, and you know, basically was like, he knew what he was going to do, you know, because her parents talk about how she's like a fighter and she would have like fought back, you know, and like her sassy, bossy kind of personality that she's described kind of makes me believe the same thing, that if she knew she was being attacked, she would have fought. But there's no like attack marks or anything on him, but he basically tells everybody, yeah, you know, that he strangled her to death, and then after he strangled her, she was lying on the floor and he went to like roll her up, you know, in like some sort of blanket or tarp. And this is when Bella, the oldest daughter, like basically walks in on him. And so then he tells the girl, he tells, you know, his daughter Bella, oh, mommy just doesn't feel well. We have to take her somewhere. He then proceeds to take his daughter Bella and his daughter Celeste, get them in the car with his dead mother, with their dead mother on the floor. And he drives these girls 45 minutes out to a job site where they had oil tanks and barrels. And when he got out of the vehicle, he removed his dead wife and he put her, like, basically dug a shallow grave for her and put her in the grave. And then he put a blanket over little Cece's head and strangled her to death. And then walked over to little Bella and did the same thing. After he was done, he took the girls' body and shoved them into oil tanks.
Wow.
To conceal their body. He eventually led police to the site of where the bodies were for his wife and two children.
Yeah, he eventually told police because once the truth started coming out, he had to tell them little by little. Otherwise, it would have taken a while to find the bodies, probably.
Right.
Who knows?
Oh, yeah, absolutely, if he hadn't have said. So it said that on November 6, 2018, he pled guilty to multiple counts of first-degree murder. And a part of his plea deal, the death penalty was actually removed from his sentencing. So he is to now serve 5 consecutive life sentences without the possibility of parole. So,
wow. I don't think that's enough. They should have given him at least maybe 10 life sentences would have been better, but that's a good start.
Yeah.
I mean,
like, he's not going to live to, you know, even see probably one life sentence.
I was being silly, but I think...
I'm all about the dramatics on it.
You mentioned that the family didn't want him to get death sentence.
You're right. We did touch on that before, and yes, I do believe that they are the ones that kind of like came with the agreement that no, yeah, they weren't going to give him the death penalty, that they were going to give him the life sentence. So, yeah. I mean, you know, and then he comes out later, you know, I mean, it's said that Chris Watts is going to come out with more to talk about. You know, and he's, you know, and I guess he's doing like a book deal right now with some lady, you know, about
he's trying to maintain his innocence.
No, I don't think he's trying to maintain his innocence. I think he's just gonna tell us all actually like what happened.
Why he did it.
Yeah, why he did it, or like, I don't know. I don't think he should be allowed to like make any money off of this, or should be allowed to give these interviews and stuff. But I guess for, you know, everybody out there, the crime junkie people, I know we all want to kind of know, you know, but.
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely intriguing, to say the least, to see or try to get an idea of what made him commit this murder. What's his thought process? Because it doesn't fit a pattern. It doesn't fit the pattern that he's been, you know, his life pattern. It just doesn't fit his life pattern, you know, for him to get an argument with his wife and strangle her to death. That's not. It's just like, what happened there?
Right.
That's going to be the question always. What happened?
Yeah.
Strangled both his kids too? Like, wow.
I know. It's absolutely horrific. and such condolences out to the families, you know, that have to deal with this later on, you know, and just, you know, gosh, I just hope the families in peace and living, you know, in heaven together or something, because it's just so, so horrific. You know, it's crazy too, because, you know, he gets like fan mail and stuff. Like, there's women out there that are all about him.
Oh, well, yeah, I'm not surprised. There's, wasn't, Charles Manson married?
Well, yeah, I mean, yeah, all the...
In jail? I mean, in prison, I mean?
Yeah, there's a bunch of, I mean, I would say, like, serial killers and stuff that have... But, yeah, I don't know, it's just crazy. I know he hasn't lived the greatest life in, because he's had to been moved like quite a few prisons just because of all the death threats and everything that he has.
Well, that's good. That's actually, I think that's the bright side of this story, is like he's living his life in misery every day.
Yeah.
I hate to say it, but it is the what's the word that I'm using, that I want to use here? I guess it is the one positive. I don't want to say positive thing, but it's, you know, he deserves it. He deserves to be to have the worst life in there, to be threatened every day, to be beat up every day. It's just what he did is horrible, and he's gonna have to pay for the rest of his life.
Yeah, yeah, I completely agree. Yep, he deserves to suffer for sure.
And he is suffering, and therefore he definitely is.
Yeah, I think so too.
I wonder. Well, I guess we'll know when he writes his book, but. I wonder if he regrets it. I wonder if he feels like, what did I do? Or if he's...
Oh, right. Like, what are the... Yeah, I'm curious, too. I mean, he definitely has said some gut-wrenching stuff. I highly recommend, if, you know, people haven't watched the Netflix special that came out, that they should, because, you know, he definitely says some crazy stuff about how he feels about everything.
Like, what did he say?
Well, he said that, you know, that when Bella, like, because Bella was the last one to die, and she witnessed her sister being strangled. And he says what haunts him the most is the fact that Bella said, "No, Daddy, please don't do the same thing that you did to Cece to me." Like, so she saw what, like, happened to her sister. And he says that repeats in his brain, like, all the time.
Yeah, so he definitely does have remorse then.
Yeah, I would definitely think that he would have remorse from
Maybe it is just not to justify what he did, but maybe he was a normal guy who just happened to snap. Maybe she did try to hit him or something. Maybe she was bossy and a little bit abusive towards him.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
He snapped.
Maybe.
But
you know,
the thing with the girls is not just the, you know, him killing the girls is just.
Is just, yeah, it's almost like unimaginable. I don't know what made him think that he couldn't, you know, be there for them, or just least spare them. Like, why did you have to kill your girls too?
He probably panicked and wanted to hide all of everything, and I don't know, it's one of those things we'll never really know.
Yep, it's totally true. Well, we have now completed our episode.
Woohoo!
So, woohoo! Thanks for being on, Victor. You are so awesome. I love having you on. Yes, we will definitely do this again. So, yes. I hope all of my listeners enjoyed everything. Any shout outs you want to do before we end this? You want to, like, talk about your Instagram, or Victor does tattoos, y'all.
I do make tattoos. That's my job. So if you want to follow me on Instagram, my Instagram is Palartes. It's PALLARTES. And shout out to all the students that are working on it.
Yeah.
That's how I met you through all the AMDA people.
Yeah. No, ADA. We're not ADA. We're the ADA. I know. We're the ADA, not the AMDA.
That's a terrible mistake I just made. I'm sorry.
No, you're fine. No, but yeah, that's true. You were the circle. You were the glue that kept us all together.
That's a great way to put it.
Yes, it is. Well, my friend, thank you so much for being on the episode. Everyone, till next time.
See you next week.
Bye, Tuesdays with Trisha. Bye, Victor. Take care.
Bye, Trisha.
That's right. It's CBD Store, located on 31801 Mission Trail in Lake Elsinore, California. This is Inland Empire's only premium CBD store. You guys, seriously, they have CBD-infused water, oils, tinctures, gummies, roll-ons, bath bombs, scrubs, lotions, so much more. You have to go check it out for your one-stop CBD shop. It's CBD Store. In Lake Elsinore, California.
Now don't forget to listen to Tuesdays with Trisha.
Yay!